It's The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega, and thanks for being with us. By the end of this week, Puerto Rico's governor, Ricardo Rosselló, is expected to vacate his office, leaving behind a fractured government. Rosselló announced on Twitter that he selected a new Secretary of State, Pedro Pierluisi, who's expected to replace him. But as we've reported on The Takeaway, political unrest of the past few years, including the fallout from Hurricane Maria, the economic crisis on the island, and the ensuing displacement of thousands of Puerto Ricans, have brought the diaspora closer together than perhaps any other time in history. And now millions of Puerto Ricans on the island, in the continental U.S. and around the world, are poised to decide what to do with that political power and where they go from here. And we wanted to hear from three Puerto Ricans here in New York City. Caridad de la Luz, otherwise known as La Bruja, is a poet, musician, and activist. Andrew Padilla is an artist, educator, and journalist. And Sammy Nevir Olivares is an LGBTQ activist. Thank you all for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's great to be here.
I think it's time that we have a conversation about what I'm saying is this sort of next level for the Puerto Rican conversation in the United States, which is really examining where we go from here after we've saw Hurricane Maria, after the protest, after Rosselló stepped down, and examining a lot of this idea of the diaspora. Who are we and what does that mean today? And so we're going to unpack a lot of these issues. The big news was Governor Rosselló announced that he was stepping down. This was historic. This was unprecedented. This has never happened. When you each heard the news, how did you feel, Andrew?
I heard the news that Rosselló was maybe going to resign. Reports where he was going to resign at 9, at 10, at 11, at 12, at 5, at 6. I mean... So how did I feel? I felt exhausted. I felt exhausted by the time we finally knew that he was going to step down on now this Friday. So I felt exhausted, but I also felt relieved and feel like we were heard for the first time in a very long while.
Caridad, what about you?
I found the news absolutely exhilarating. And I don't trust the government, so I was... then quickly thinking, okay, so then what's the plan, really? What's really going to happen? What does this mean? Because at first, I really didn't think it was going to happen. But the resilience of our people, you know, we're not backing down. And, you know, our people have taken so much. We've lost families. I mean, my grandmother is displaced. My abuelita living in Manatí all her life, you know, my childhood respite was destroyed by Hurricane Maria, and she's in Texas now, and I'm thinking, okay, so how are we really going to repair this? How are we going to get back on our feet? So, like, all these questions, like, it was exhilarating, and then it was quick, like, back to business. Okay, what's the plan? What's going to happen?
Sammy, what about you? What was your reaction when you heard Rosselló step down?
Well, I share the relieved part because it was a long day and actually 12 days of emotional trauma, and the administration was doing it on purpose to drain people out and to suppress the insurgency. I also was exhilarated, but mostly pride. I was very proud of the people of Puerto Rico who came together to the streets. And while we have done it before to remove the Navy out of Vieques, and while the university students from university of Puerto Rico, where I was studying, did that for 6 months. It had never taken a mass mobilization of 500,000 people. So, and consistently. And most importantly, against our own government. And in Puerto Rico, when you go against one of the two main parties, you're basically blacklisted, right? So to see that resiliency, but like defiance and determination was very impressive and very emotional. It was very frustrating, but also emotional for us in the diaspora that we could not be there, but also that we were in spirit.
So let's talk a little bit about, because this idea that what we saw, I think, in the protests was, as you mentioned, Sammy, the diaspora was watching, but the diaspora was also participating in the protests, right? Which to me was something unprecedented as well, that we saw protests in New York, we saw protests around the world. Andrew, you were tweeting a lot about this and about the images that you saw. What struck you about that?
What struck me was that you had so many people in the diaspora coming out to protest that you don't normally see protests. So we had folks come out to Union Square and Columbus Circle and Grand Central, and that was powerful. Defend PR and NY Boricua Resistance. Like, there was a lot of people that were making that happen. But in those places, you know, you saw the usual faces, but you also saw a lot of new people. And in my neighborhood of East Harlem, Grisel Robles, along with a bunch of her neighbors, came together in Taino Towers to do a spontaneous protest that was for largely for folks who either were on the elderly side and weren't going to head down, or a little too young to head down by themselves, or had work and, you know, decided they wanted to celebrate this with their neighbors. And so, you know, we had so many spontaneous protests occur and celebrations occur throughout New York, that while we were not in Puerto Rico, we felt the reverberations of that energy. And we were all kind of committed to trying to move that forward from wherever we were.
Caridad, you were at some of the protests as well. Tell us about what you were doing and what the mood was in these protests for you.
It was this energy that was palpable. And I mean, they came with pots and pans. People had whistles. They had flags that were so huge, like on these long poles. And, you know, we were at Columbus Circle, right there next to Trump Tower. And it started with a few. And then they just kept coming and coming. And then it was a larger group, and there was cameras everywhere. And then, you know, it was hard to even stand. Like, then, you know, like, they had to ask people to move a little bit back just so you could see where is the front line. And then it started to rain. And that was like a blessing. And then it rained over here, rained over there. And, you know, I'm La Bruja, you know, so it's, all that stuff means things to me. So it was like a blessing from the skies. It was the tears of our people in heaven. It was to stay resilient, keep going. And then the march, then all the way to Grand Central. And it was, you know, it was just magical. After Hurricane Maria and after Rosselló and after seeing the corruption, and I think those people that didn't think it was possible to be living under such corruption finally had to accept that it was true. So it's like painful, it's mourning, but at the same time, it's like the fighting spirit is here. So I hope that this resilience spreads beyond just the Puerto Rican people. I think, you know, all humanitarians can feel like, okay, this is happening, and this is our time to rise up and not back down.
And so we're in this moment of diasporic unity, if you will, right? We're here on the island, around the world, and in the continental United States, we're having this moment as Boricuas, as Puerto Ricans. But it hasn't always been that way. There's always, for those of us who grew up in New York, I think there was always a, yes, we go to visit the island every summer, and we go to Manatí or Barceloneta or whatever, and we spend the summer there, but then are you really Puerto Rican? Are you New Yorican? Like, where does that really fall in? And I'm curious to hear your thoughts on that division. Sammy, you grew up there. What was the view of us folks coming to the island before this moment of sort of national unity?
I was born and raised in Puerto Rico, but mentally I identify as a New Yorican because I read this history. I read how Julia de Burgos was created files by the FBI and she had to flee Puerto Rico. And she felt so Puerto Rican in soul and spirit, but yet she found herself in New York because she was not considered Puerto Rican in the island and she was not New Yorican in here. So I read her poetry and I said, I'm going to live there when I'm grown. And I wanted to be New Yorican because of that history of helping the island from afar, having achieved freedom and liberty. But always worried me that Julia de Burgos, while we admire her, the rest of the people, like the Puerto Ricans in the Bronx and the Puerto Ricans who are loud and wear the wave the flag in the Puerto Rican parade, were seen, you know, as not as Puerto Ricans because they do not speak Spanish, because they have never been to the island, or because they culturally express differently. But I also believe that The media has a lot to do with that, because Puerto Rican main newspaper, El Nuevo Día, and TV have always treat the diaspora as something, as the other. So it's not as a unity, not as a body. For example, news from United States are filed under the international section. And we see Trump and the federal government as the United States government. So I think that division happened, but it crashed after Hurricane Maria. Hurricane Maria brought everyone together, and people saw that in light of the vacuum from the federal government and Puerto Rican governor, it was the diaspora who stepped in and went and helped. So, and now half of Puerto Ricans are in the diaspora after Hurricane Maria. So now every single family has one, two, or more in the diaspora. So now it's really difficult for them to see the diaspora as the other. And now we are just enmeshed. And Puerto Rico is actually not in the island, it is outside. We are spread among the world. And so we are a nation spread. So now there is no division between the diaspora and the island.
And I'm curious, Caridad, when you said your grandmother went from Manatí and she was sort of had to leave after Hurricane Maria and she's in Texas. One thing that's interesting to me is to your point also, Sammy, is that we are not only coming to the places where we used to come, which was New York, maybe Chicago, right? We're everywhere now in the United States. And Andrew, I'm wondering what you see as the impact that diaspora here, the spread of the diaspora throughout the United States, outside of the traditional pockets of Puerto Ricans, if you will, the places that we used to only go to, like Texas, like North Carolina, like California, like Arizona, like Philadelphia. I mean, we're literally everywhere. What impact do you see that having, whether it's cultural or otherwise?
Well, one of the things that Maria reminded us is, as was just said, our diaspora is not only across the U.S., it's global. I mean, we after Maria, people in every major, Boricuas in every major U.S. city got together to do something after Maria, right? To raise money, to send supplies, support, raise awareness, do whatever they could. But this also happened across the world. I mean, you had Boricuas in London, in Spain, in the Netherlands, in Slovenia, in Australia, in Switzerland, where at the time I was doing my master's, who were getting together money, right? We're doing events in whatever part of the world they were to support the island. And so a lot of the diaspora engagement you've seen now, you know, that's kind of a lot of the groundwork also that happened after Maria. A lot of these spontaneous protests you see happening are a lot of the same faces that were doing something for the island after Maria.
One of the things that we've talked about, everybody from 1898, we've talked about Julia de Burgos, we've talked about the broader diaspora, but there was a parallel, I don't want to say parallel movement, there was a movement here in the 1960s and 70s in New York called the Young Lords. This was perhaps, for those of us of a certain age, that we remember seeing, you know, that type of activism among Puerto Ricans in New York. I'm wondering, are there any parallels or any historical parallels that we can draw from what the Young Lords activism looked like to what we're seeing today? Or is today just a completely different beast altogether? Whoever wants to take that is fine.
The Young Lords were listening to their people. They were listening to disenfranchised communities of color in New York and asking them what they wanted and trying to act on those needs. And that's the exact opposite of what the Puerto Rican government has done. And that's part of what has really gotten people so upset. You know, all of us growing up right now, we haven't lived in a time where the Puerto Rican government really prioritized the needs of Puerto Ricans first. We don't really know what that would look like.
And a major difference between both is that Young Lords was like personality driven of real like leaders. And this is absolutely horizontal movement where there is no actual leaders. And I think that's also unprecedented in Puerto Rico. You always have like leaders who organizations who push for it. But this was so spontaneous. Not, I would not say completely organic, but because there were many groups that were organizing about all these issues, but they was just like jumped in. And it was like women were and LGBTQ and young people and students were the ones who jumped in.
You mentioned this movement, Sammy, and women, and one of the things the young lords had to reckon with was their own sexism, their own machismo within the party. Caridad, you're nodding, because we know that that happened. They had to reckon with this idea of bringing women to the table as equals, and that was a very different conversation in the 1970s, but here we are in 2019. Caridad, as a woman, as an activist, as a Puerto Rican, how has it changed, if in your opinion? Like, does this movement really bring to light the issues that women are facing, not just Puerto Ricans, but Puerto Rican women? And does it put women at the center of the conversation?
Well, in the chat, you know, the way that the women were addressed, and this is a politician, this is a leader of, you know, Puerto Rico, but it's been, you know, the whole puta thing and the, you know, that's basically how women are looked upon by machistas, like the whole misogynistic and toxic masculinity that was how we've grown up. And in the Young Lords, yes, they did have to deal with those issues, and unsuccessfully, because what happened then, they couldn't actually accept that women could be equals, and it disbanded and it dissipated, and they just celebrated 50 years since, you know, the Young Lords. And you know, and I myself have experienced toxic masculinity from a young lord. This is not a shaft, papa. This is not, you know, this is not jive we're talking. This is life. This is equality. This is important. I am a human being. You're not above me. You know, we treat our women the way we treat our planet. Bottom line, exploit, take, destroy, pillage, all of those things, you know, and we're seeing that today. And, you know, the fact that we have these leaders like Alejandra Ocasio-Cortez, that we have, you know, Melissa Mark Viverito, that we have a Carmen Yulín Cruz, that's amazing. But to know that they are suffering the slings and arrows of this still, you know, it's a fight. It's still part of the fight. It makes me really emotional, because it's tiring. It's enough that the fight is big enough, but to still have that underlying current of not being enough or not, you know, is really sad.
Sammy, another issue that's come up in these protests, or not issue, but another interesting part of the protests, have been the inclusion of the LGBTQ community. Similar to the question that I just asked Caridad about the role of women, what has been the history, if you will, of LGBTQ Puerto Ricans, their inclusion in any of these movements, and not just their inclusion as individuals, but their inclusion with the issues that affect them as well?
When we talk about LGBTQ people, what people in Puerto Rico are afraid of, transgender people, are about effeminate gay people. So this is about gender issue. And like the same way that women are discriminated against in Puerto Rico and attacked, is the same gender violence that is impacting the LGBTQ community. And I think it was beautiful that it was the poetic justice that it was attacks to women and LGBTQ people who took down this machista government and the most important history, a chapter in our history. Because as Caridad said, in that chat, the text messages that most affected people were the ones against women, the ones against LGBTQ people, particularly Ricky Martin at this point, and about the death of Maria, right? So to see 500,000 people coming out in support of that, it was basically like Puerto Rico came out, but it came out in support of the LGBTQ people. It was like reverse coming out of the closet, because coming out of supporting of the LGBTQ movement in Puerto Rico, it is devastating for your career, for you people. It is not well seen that you support the LGBTQ movement. I was born and raised in the South, and it was very homophobic. I left Puerto Rico because of the sexual repression. I couldn't leave. I couldn't be who I am. So many, many people who have left the island, it's not only because of the lack of economic opportunities, it is because of gender repression, right? And to see that support and the LGBTQ flag wave in the protest and people supporting Ricky Martin and all the LGBTQ was a beautiful thing. And that's what people now in the island has to get used to.
Andrew, where do we go from here? The fight, as many activists have said, is not over, but thinking more broadly, where does the diaspora and where does Puerto Rico go from here?
I think the only way that we maintain Puerto Rico as an island for Puerto Ricans is by us keeping the pressure on. I mean, our island is in an existential crisis. The UN estimates that our population is going to drop from 3 million to 1.2 at the end of this century. And so I don't know what is going to eventually solve Puerto Rico's problems, but I think there is a unity amongst people in Puerto Rico and the diaspora that we have to solve that, right? That is our right. It is our right to determine our own future.
Andrew Padilla is an artist, educator, and journalist, and I've also been speaking with Caridad de la Luz, otherwise known as La Bruja, a poet, musician, and activist, and with Sammy Nemir Olivares, an LGBTQ activist. Thanks to you all for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And you can find all of our Puerto Rico coverage at thetakeaway.org/Puerto Rico.